New Yorker magazine critic Alex Ross credits his parents' love of both classical music and European and American history for the intimate connection he made between the two disciplines at a young age. The author of the critically acclaimed book Everything Else is Noise, Listening to the 20th Century, appears at Illinois State University Monday to speak about the 21st century music and composers. Ross also speaks with GLT's John Norton via Skype about why he wanted to connect what he says many see as otherworldly music and the legends who created it.
Composers like Bach and Mozart and Beethoven, we can easily see them as just these colossal brains floating in space,
right?
Or these vessels of some profound spiritual emanation. But they were flesh and blood people, and they were part of society and culture, and they were affected, shaped by that culture and society. And I guess that was what really fascinated me. How is this art form that seems so almost supernatural, you know, how does it intersect with history? Of course, for me, that really came to a head when I started exploring 20th century music, where these connections and these collisions between composers and the history around them become absolutely unavoidable. And, you know, that's where my first book, The Rest is Noise, came from, this twin fascination with music and its traditions and history, especially 20th century history and all of its, frankly, horrors. And that's the story that I unfolded in that book.
I want to ask you about the intertwining of the history and the music here, but I want to ask you this first, is you make these people human. As you said, these are real flesh and blood human beings that, you know, we now see as almost godlike figures, but you show their foibles, you show the rivalries between some of these now legendary people as well. In that book, especially, you're talking about The Rest is Noise. Why is it important to show the human side of these people?
Oh, because I think it shows how this is a continuing tradition. You know, the moment we sort of dehumanize these people and put them on a pedestal and turn them into almost godlike entities, as you say, it takes the music out of our contemporary lives. You know, something that has strongly impelled my career as a writer, as a commentator on music from the beginning, is my love of the contemporary side of classical music. And, you know, I tried to be a composer when I was growing up and never really led anywhere, but I strongly identified with that very, very difficult act of creating new music. And I admire it because I know how hard it is and how I fell short trying to do it. If I have one overarching mission as a critic, it is to promote new music, to talk about music and criticize it as well, of course, but just, you know, show what's going on there and where it comes from. You know, making the great composers of the past real flesh and blood people, it just opens up that relationship between the storied past and, you know, our complicated presence. And so I think that's one reason I do it. I mean, the other reason is, you know, that's just the way history should be written. You know, we should not idolize, you know, dehumanize these people and make them into gods. I think we can understand them even better and appreciate their music even better if we understand its humanness.
You say you came up short as a composer. Does that affect how you write as a critic? Does it make you more sympathetic, or does it, you know, does it affect you in other ways?
I'm not sure. It's hard to say what effect it has exactly. It's just something that I care about so deeply. So I'm just writing about contemporary composers as much as I can. You know, of course, there's 1,000 years of history here and a vast amount of activity that goes into presenting it and performing it. So, you know, that's part of my beat as well. But I feel as though I'm ultimately happiest when I'm writing about new music, and frankly, writing about new music that excites me and that I feel is important and that other people should hear. But, you know, of course, I need to be critical as well. No one believes the the praise if, you know, you do nothing but praise all the time. You know, it has to be set in relief against its opposite, in a sense. So I suppose I'm ultimately more sympathetic to the position, the often very difficult position of the composer. That's just simply the most important thing that I do is write about new music, I believe.
Alex Ross, the music critic for The New Yorker, our guest here on GLT Sound Ideas. The music and the history and how you intertwine that, are you saying that those two are more intertwined? They have more to do with each other than maybe a lot of people realize?
Yes, I think people tend to overlook the degree to which music is affected by history and by its circumstances. I mean, we do have this tendency to treat music as this ethereal substance that floats through the air and sort of comes from somewhere we know not where, or from these kinds of strange magical people who stand outside of daily life. And frankly, we do this with popular music as well as with classical music. And we often use music as a way of escaping, frankly, from daily life and from political life and sort of everything around us. We want to find this zone of comfort and perhaps of absolute beauty. And so it can actually bother people when you reintroduce the politics and the history, because this is often, you know, what they're trying to get away from as they're listening to music. But for me, again, it just makes the music all the more valuable, all the more miraculous. When you look at something like Olivier Messiaen's Quartet from the End of Time, and this is one of the most remarkable moments in 20th century musical history. Messiaen was a relatively young French composer who fought in the French army and was taken prisoner of war in 1940 after the French defeat at the hands of the Nazis. And so he was at a prisoner of war camp, and there was a guard who took an interest in him and found out that he was a composer and gave him music paper, pens and pencils, and a space to work. And from that arose this extraordinary 8-movement piece, the Quartet from the End of Time, which is very religious in nature. Messiaen was a conservative Catholic, and this work makes no overt reference or even subtle reference to the circumstances of the war. It is based on texts from the Book of Revelation. But of course, you can't possibly not think about the circumstances under which it was written and first performed on this freezing cold night at this prisoner of war camp with hundreds of prisoners, as well as the German guards in attendance. And that's just so astonishing that this man was able to create a work which can be quite strange on first listening for those who don't know this kind of music, but there are certain passages in it. There are two movements in particular, which I think no one can resist, that have this pure and simple and overwhelming beauty. And I think we just appreciate this all the more when we realize where it came from.
Alex Ross from The New Yorker, the music critic, our guest on GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. How do you choose what music or even what performance that you are going to write about?
You know, I've been at The New Yorker for quite a while now, more than 20 years, which is bewildering to think about. But, you know, I have a routine now. I've been working with the same editor, a brilliant editor named Daniel Zaleski, for many years now. And we just talk things over, and I come up with ideas and run them past him, and some of these ideas excite him more than others. Most of the ideas do originate with me, and I spend an awful lot of time thinking about what to write about. In a way, deciding what to write about is just as important as what I write, because I want, you know, from column to column to be building up as broad a picture of the musical scene as I can. You know, I'm not writing 3 or 4 times a week as newspaper critics do. It's just every few weeks. So it's so important for me to find the subjects that sort of piece together comprehensive coverage over time. And I spend so much time just listening to music, exploring composers I haven't heard of, following leads that people send to me and friends and colleagues suggest to me. It's so easy, of course, now to access this vast quantity of music. There's all the streaming music, but there's also composers' personal websites radio streaming on the internet. It's actually far more than I can possibly assimilate. So, you know, what I do is very selective. It can never be comprehensive, frankly, in the end. But I do try to do justice to the variety of what's out there because it's incredibly diverse. And when you mention modern music, something quite specific often comes to mind for people, and often it's something rather unpleasant. They think of contemporary classical music as jarring and dissonant and strange. A lot of it is, frankly, and I think it's really interesting and it deserves to be listened to despite its initial strangeness. But then there's an awful lot of other music that does not fit that description, that stereotype, that is much more in keeping with conventional, you know, familiar standards of what beautiful music is. So I try to cover that entire spectrum as best I can.
That segues nicely into you coming to ISU now to speak, and yet your topic is the rough guide to the 21st century music. Is classical music the focus of this talk or a large part of it?
Yeah, I think classical music is the heart of the talk. I will be talking about composers. And, you know, composer is a funny word. You know, who is a composer anymore? You know, we think of the word, first of all, in the sense of the classical tradition, and in particular, the kind of composer who sits down with a pile of manuscript paper and writes out a piece for others to play. You know, that was the dominant mode for so long. But things are evolving, and of course, you know, for the whole of the 20th century, you had jazz composers as well, who would plot out a piece in advance, often write quite a bit of it out on music paper. But then in terms of the jazz ensemble, improvisation comes into play and elaboration and, you know, everything else that goes into the creation of a jazz piece. And then there are songwriters, you know they're composers too. Producers, in a way, studio producers have become composers, creating often these incredibly sophisticated sound textures of one track on top of another. You know, it's really interesting that Kendrick Lamar was the most recent recipient of the Pulitzer Prize for Music,
right,
which historically has gone to composers, classical composers. And that's a sign that our definition of composer is changing. The music I'm going to be talking about, it comes out of that classical tradition, but there's so much else you can throw into the mix. And, you know, an awful lot of composers these days are in conversation with other traditions, pop music, with jazz, with everything else. There are figures who you can't even really decide what genre they belong to. There's a fantastic younger figure named Tyshawn Suri, who really is uncategorizable in the best way. And then you have quite a few composers these days who are performing in their own work, who are singing. Their work is centered on their own singing voice, and an awful lot of them are women. And this has been another sea change, and a very welcome sea change, from a really almost exclusively male tradition changing into one today that's certainly not yet at perfect gender balance, but has made a great deal of progress in recent years. And I'm especially fascinated by these singer-composers because this is also something rather new. We didn't have this phenomenon previous centuries, or at least since the Renaissance period, as much. So this is a territory where contemporary composers are showing, you know, how much more there is to be said. My big beef with classical music in general is there's too heavy a concentration on the past. And of course, all this music from past centuries, it's so glorious. I love so much of it. But when we play it to the exclusion of contemporary music, all kinds of problems arise, and I think it's unhealthy. It does a disservice to all those who are writing music now, and it creates a rather unattractive picture, you know, frankly, of a very heavily white male tradition, and it's very hard to get around that. And so I think one way to make classical music more diverse and more representative of the lives we live now is simply to play more new music. It just will automatically happen. If you pay attention to the composers who are active now and who are interesting now, the face of classical music will change.
Alec Ross is the music critic for The New Yorker and Pulitzer nominee for his book, The Rest is Noise, Listening to the 20th Century. He spoke via Skype with GLT's John Norton. Ross will speak at Illinois State University Monday at 7 p.m. at the ISU Center for Performing Arts. His topics will range from music's intersection with social issues and politics to how classical music can remain relevant to younger generations.